Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. You know, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about, you know, I talk about cults all the time. I guess because there's so many. And they just keep sprouting up. And of course, being Los Angeles, it is not the technical headquarters for Scientology, but it's certainly a big presence, and it's moved its presence up the coast. Even I feel like in LA it was kind of fading, and then a little north of LA, about an hour in Ventura, they have just built a brand new building, and it's distressing that they get enough money where they can do that anyway. But because it is, you know, a little Hollywood kind of insights and stuff, I thought I'd talk about films that were inspired by real life cults and shadowy organizations. And one of them is The Sacrament. And now that's a horror film that came out about 7 years ago. And the screenplay was written by Eli Roth, so you know it's going to be scary in a way. And the plot is centered around two vice crime journalists who set out to document a man's attempt to locate his long-lost sister, who struggled with alcohol and substance abuse before disappearing when she joined an elusive cult. And the film depicts this long-lost woman living in a religious commune, and the man attempts to make contact with his sister by mailing her a letter. Now, since the commune is run by a dangerous man known as the Father, who runs his cult with an iron fist, the crew finds it challenging to get past him. Mailing anything to his followers or sending word is next to impossible. The only hope for communication is for the man and the crew to physically visit the commune and look for the lost sister. So the vice journalist suggests, hey, you know, we'll accompany you, this man, via private helicopter to the isolated commune and stick with him until he makes physical contact with the missing sister. Then they would allow him private time to speak with her. And once the crew arrives, they stop passersby that come and go from the commune and conduct interviews with them. And everything's running seemingly smooth until it isn't. The journalists are confronted by followers who want to leave the compound, citing brainwashing, abuse, isolation, etc. And the journalists seem like, you know, that the follower, you know, seem like this is the only way out for the followers, right? And they begin to pressure the journalists to help them escape. And the journalists realize this will put them in danger, and they only made plans to extract the sister, had she been willing to go. And when the father realizes that a good portion of his flock is set to flee the cult compound, and he'll be exposed, he forces his members to drink cyanide-laced drinks. So this led to the mass killing of the flock. Now, the inspiration from the Sacrament film was inspired by the real-life horror of Jim Jones and the Jonestown cult. And, you know, a lot of people probably know, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, and it's kind of where that phrase came from, following along no matter what, right? And a lot of people have heard of, you know, the mass suicide, but they don't always know the whole story. And Jim Jones called his cult the People's Temple Agricultural Project. And you had this, it all happened back in 1978. And Jones had essentially, I mean, it was suicide in the sense that they did it on their own, but, you know, I like to think of it as murder, really. Because it was exposed that he was holding many against their will. Now, the Jonestown cult had moved from San Francisco to Guyana to escape U.S. laws and human rights watchdogs. And Jones researched, and he found out that Guyana's extradition treaty was going to give him a lot of protection because they didn't really have one with the U.S. He believed that the country was small and poor enough for him to easily obtain influence and protection from the government by simply buying the government. And he was pretty right about that. So once Jim Jones gets his flock down to this isolated coastal jungle region, he separated the women from their husbands, completely segregated men, women, and children. He tore families apart and would either assign them new relationships or forbid them from dating anyone but him. And he would force his followers to do physical labor, sometimes carrying out agricultural chores in these sweltering hot conditions until they passed out. And the followers would hear his sermons repeated over a loudspeaker 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, he was brainwashing them. Now, a lot of the members wanted to leave this little island and go home. It wasn't this utopian paradise that they were promised, but Jones, you know, forbade his followers from leaving. He hired armed guards to watch over his flock at all times, and if anyone was caught trying to escape or conduct any funny business, they were subject to be shot or tied up and tortured until they agreed to conform. There was no one for the victims to report this inhumane treatment to. I mean, very few visitors were allowed to visit the isolated jungle compound. These people really were on their own. Well, apparently, word finally reached U.S. soil regarding the horrible conditions transpiring at Jonestown. So a congressman named Leo Ryan took it upon himself to fly out to Guyana to investigate for himself. And he had an NBC film crew in tow with him, along with some relatives of people who were being held in the cult. Now, at first, his arrival went without incident. You know, the followers prepared a feast, and they did a ritual dance for their guests. It was then that a note was secretly slid to one of the members of the NBC film crew. And the note listed names of followers who were being held against their will and wanted to leave. These followers begged the film crew to help them return to the U.S. So the next morning, this politician, he offers to remove any followers from the island that wanted to go. He would jet them back home to the U.S. with no questions asked. So a few of them did pack. And as they headed for the waiting plane, you know, alongside the congressman and the NBC crew, the armed guards of the Jonestown cult ambushed them on the tarmac. And the congressman was killed, and many were wounded. So then Jim Jones told everyone to meet him and follow his explicit instructions to commit suicide. He explained to the followers that this was the only way out of trouble. So huge barrels of cyanide and Valium-laced grape Kool-Aid were distributed to the followers. Children and animals were injected first, followed by women and men who either drank the Kool-Aid or shot it up. And those who refused to drink the Kool-Aid were physically restrained by armed guards and dosed. Some followers fled into the woods to hide, but most were hunted down. By the time the horror had unfolded, over 900 Jonestown cult followers were dead, and at least 270 of the victims were children. Jim Jones himself was a coward who didn't drink his own Kool-Aid. He selected to either shoot himself in the head or he told one of his armed guards to do it for him. Only a few people who hid survived the massacre. I mean, it's just horrific. I mean, that is the ultimate madman kind of thing. And I mean, 900? All right, so what about Rosemary's Baby? Well, this horror film, you know, was shocking for the 1960s, about a young married couple who moved into a New York City apartment where they were befriended by, you know, elderly neighbors. So the young couple begin experiencing paranormal activity in their apartment. And Rosemary, the young wife, falls pregnant, which triggers an uptick in supernatural occurrences in the young couple's apartment. And Rosemary's good friend tries to investigate what's happening in her apartment, but he mysteriously dies after taking the situation to task. And then Rosemary then discovers that her elderly neighbors are not innocent old people, but rather members of a satanic cult, and they have targeted Rosemary's baby. To her dread, her own husband joins the satanic cult without informing her. The deal was for him to join the cult in exchange for the cult helping the young man's acting career, sort of success, kind of like Scientology. Inevitably, Rosemary's baby is kidnapped after the cult tells her the baby died during childbirth. She doesn't believe them and goes to her neighbor's apartment where she locates her baby. And there's several strangers gather around the baby's crib and she asks them what's going on, what have they done. She's then told the true father of her child is Satan. Now, in the film, you know, the cult is led by a character whose name is an anagram for the real-life cult leader the film is inspired by, Stephen Marcotto. And he's the son, you know, of an alleged cult of Satanists. And the film is kind of also indirectly based on aspects of the Church of Satan, which was established by Anton LaVey and who I've talked about on here numerous times. The film is also loosely linked to a cult called Buddhafield. And that was created by an actor who appeared as an extra in the film, named Michael Ralston. And he went on to recruit over 100 aspiring actors and actresses into his cult. He controlled his members' every move and forbid them from having sex, yet he would masturbate in front of them and he expected his members to worship him. And they gladly complied until he became too crazy demanding and wouldn't stop forcing himself upon both male and female followers. His followers left the cult, and he fled to Hawaii. And even from Hawaii, he's developed a new cult. And if you want to learn, you know, more about other cults, link to this film, watch the documentary Holy Hell on Netflix. And of course, Roman Polanski was also linked to the film, you know, and his wife Sharon Tate and his unborn son were murdered in one of the most unforgettable, brutal, satanic bloodbaths in the 60s, if not in all time. No. Then there was the film The Master, and it was released in 2012. And this film's about a World War II veteran who's having trouble adjusting to civilian life after the war. And after being accused of poisoning a co-worker with moonshine, he moves away from that town and takes up residency on the yacht of a cult leader who runs The Cause. And the cult leader realizes the veteran is easily manipulated and takes him under his wing. And he brainwashes the veteran to be his muscle and to handle anyone who tries to hurt or gain access to the leader. Now the two eventually grow tired of each other and part ways. And years later, after the veteran settles down and has children, he runs into the leader again. And the leader explains how big the cause has grown. And, you know, the friendship couldn't pick up where it left off, so the two lose contact again. The real cult, though, thought to be depicted in this film is Scientology. And, you know, obviously some people call Scientology a religion. Some call it a cult. But that's essentially what that's based on. Then there's the movie The Wicker Man. It was done in 1973. And in Britain, they call it one of the best horror films ever created. It was directed by Robin Hardy. And its a plot is about a police officer who visits a small, isolated Scottish island to investigate reports of a missing child being held there after receiving an anonymous letter explaining as much. Now, once the officer arrives to the island, he realizes that it's inhabited by a pagan cult that participates in sex orgies, strange rituals, and most disturbingly, a plan to sacrifice the missing girl in an upcoming ceremony. So he attempts to save the young girl's life, and at first he appeared successful, but he's subsequently cornered by cult members wearing animal headdresses, you know, full-on antlers, goat heads, etc. So then the cult decides, hey, we're going to let the girl go, and just sacrifice the officer instead. So they place the officer inside of kind of like a Burning Man style wicker statue and set him ablaze. Now, the film is allegedly based on real life activities and sacrifices of the Druids. You know, fire celebrations and the burning of the straw man remain, you know, carried out traditions today. It's also loosely based on David Pinner's 1967 novel Ritual, which combined elements of mystery and the occult and the death of a missing girl from a Cornish village. And the Wicker Man prop itself was inspired by this artist back in, I think, 1676. Now, the boyfriend of the actress who starred in the film tried to get the film banned in several countries due to a nude dance scene that took the director and crew 13 hours to shoot. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, a body double was used in the nude scene because the actress was pregnant during the shooting. But the boyfriend didn't believe there was a double used and claimed that he recognized his girlfriend's body. So this led him to lobby for the film to be banned. It's said that the actress was also displeased because She said it was a body double, but it was none other than a prostitute the director had hired in a hurry. The actor Edward Woodward, who played the police officer in the film, was genuinely terrified of the Wicker Man prop. So upon being dragged towards this effigy, he asked the director if he was really going to be placed inside of the Wicker Man structure, and the director replied yes. He then asked if he would be placed inside while it was set on fire, in which the director again replied, yes. And so then Woodward screamed, you know, oh God, oh Jesus Christ, upon seeing the structure. That was his genuine reaction. He said that he'd never been so scared in his six-decade career. Now, one of the sacrificial goats that was placed in a pen of the Wicker Man, so it was positioned just over Woodward, became so scared by the fire that it peed on his head. Many years later, several extreme scenes that were forcibly cut from the film were later offered in a 120-minute director's cut special edition that gave fans a more full experience of what the director had intended audiences to fully see. In 1973, after production had wrapped, the official film reels, negatives, and outtakes were stored in a secure vault. And upon a change in film management, the new company requested that everything in the vault be destroyed. So that included outtakes and negatives from The Wicker Man. That's why the director's cut only shows kind of a fraction what the director had hoped to offer fans. Not much survived that vault kind of purge. So just last year, a film called Midsommar. It was directed by Ari Aster, and it kind of like a 2019 updated Wicker Man. So young outsiders travel to a Midsommar Swedish Burning Man festival kind of thing. But instead of finding, you know, this fun kind of festival, idyllic kind of thing, they realize they've stumbled into a violent pagan cult. At the time they visit the commune, there is a rare ritual being carried out that's set to occur only every 90 years. So, reluctantly, these young outsiders attend the ritual. And once there, they witness crazy actions like commune members committing suicide and harming themselves in the name of the cause. When one of the male suicides goes wrong, the members smash the man's skull until he dies. I mean, in this cult, follow-through is mandatory. So despite witnessing all these unfathomable horrors that aren't emotionally sound, the young people say, hey, yeah, we'll stick around and watch more. So then the commune begins to cause division among the young people, and it breaks them down one by one. And after a series of sacrifices, there's only two young outsiders left. The commune then explains they have to sacrifice people to please the community and purge evil from their people. The remaining two members turn on each other, with one selecting the other for sacrifice. So, allegedly, this film is loosely based on the real-life traditions and beliefs and rituals of multiple pagan cults researched by the director. Now, obviously, there is a real Midsummer Eve festival in Sweden, but there people dance around flower maypoles. Nobody gets killed. The real festival supposedly does not have ties to human sacrifice, but... as folklore has it, those who dance around a maypole do it from Satan, and they do it until they drop from exhaustion. It's mostly reserved for women, with the last woman standing being crowned the thorny May Day Queen. There was the movie The Hills Have Eyes. So there's this 1977 original, and then the remake in 2006. Now, it's a film about cannibals who prey on victims that pass through a town that's generally isolated from the public. And the Wes Craven film, you know, it's a cult classic, and it's allegedly based on the cave-dwelling Sawney Bean family that resided in Scotland and preyed on tourists and travelers by ambushing them as they passed by. This family tribe of 48 dwellers were thought to have killed and eaten over 1,000 human victims. And once the Bean family was outed for their crimes, they were murdered before they could ever face trial. Now, historians dispute if the Bean story is real or, you know, just a folklore tale. It's also said that the country of Scotland would like to write the Bean family out of their history because it's too dark and they don't like anything that hurts tourism. In 2012, there was a movie called The Conspiracy. And two young filmmakers follow a crazed local conspiracy theorist for a film project. And they soon come to realize that the man's not as crazy as they thought. And the world events are controlled by a secret underground syndicate. And the director drew inspiration from the Mithras cult that was developed in secrecy by the Roman Empire. Now, to this day, sects of that cult hold ritual initiation practices in order to have a stake in how the world runs. You know, many catastrophic events have been blamed on the cult by conspiracy theorists who believe the cult pulls strings behind the scenes of politics in the world. And, you know, supposedly every time the group holds a huge secret society meeting, a horrible human tragedy occurs in the world. And people believe it's not coincidental, and more so that the members furthering their own interest. You know, it's similar to, you know, the conspiracies around Bilderberg or Freemasons or the Trilateral Commission. In the film, the director used both actors and real-life people involved in the conspiracy community. Another Eli Roth contribution to this list, Hostel. And, you know, it was linked to torture chambers reportedly located in the Netherlands. So if you haven't seen this film, it's from 2005. And it was written and directed by Eli Roth. And it depicts torture and murder and brutal situations of human debauchery. I mean, Eli did a really good job writing The Sacrament. I mean, he knows his horror. He knows his cults. And the plot revolves around college kids who set off on a backpacking trip. And after falling into a world of drugs and sex abroad, they befriend a stranger. And follow him to Slovakia to investigate a hostel filled with lusty women. They find themselves in trouble after realizing they're meddling in a shadowy underground organization called the Elite Hunting Club. And the group kidnaps tourists to sell to their customers on the black market. And what do they sell them for? Whatever the rich elite purchasers want. You know, torture play, sexual slavery, murder. I mean, you get the idea. All of them are dark. All of them are heinous. And they're willing to pay exorbitant amounts of money to see people tortured and killed. In the fictional film, the college kids are lured, captured, and tortured. I mean, it is one of the bloodiest, goriest horror films in big cinema. And it has had, obviously, multiple sequels. It is not for the squeamish. But the film is based on real-life shadowy organizations, you know, who operate exactly as the film portrays. Some research, you know, goes back to Thai organizations like Thailand and the powerful crime syndicates that operate there. Those who take advantage of their people's poverty and lure victims away with promises of well-paying jobs that will take care of the families. But these types of organizations, I mean, they're operated kind of the same way all over the world. And the director, I think, likes the eerie fact that this entrapment and kidnapping could happen to anyone in the world. I mean, the films play on that fear. While the film is fictional, remember, these films have real research rooted in society. Now, arrests have been made worldwide in connection to such crimes and syndicates. In 2019, police in the Netherlands arrested men who were allegedly linked to shipping containers that had been converted into what appears to be torture-holding chambers that were buried in the ground and meant to hold victims. And these containers had thousands of dollars worth of soundproofing, along with mechanisms meant for restraint and torture. Now, since there were handcuffs hanging from the ceiling, there's no doubt about the implied intentions. And inside one of the containers was a strange dentist chair fitted with straps and chains. On the floor were pliers and shackles and pruning shears and scalpels and other tools that, although not illegal, were suspicious in nature when combined with the entire environment. I mean, think about this. If you're spending all this kind of money, there must be people willing to pay more money. The containers were unused, but authorities grew uneasy about the intended purpose and therefore arrested the parties involved. What's more unnerving is that police uniforms, police firearms, and drugs were stashed inside of the containers. So had these potential criminals previously posed as law enforcement authority in order to gain trust in luring victims? Now, near where the containers, near the containers was a warehouse where a new fleet of vehicles, SUVs, trucks, all covered in plastic, new and ready to go, were being stored. Who were these people? Where did they get all of their pricey supplies and equipment? Well prepared and in bulk. Now, it's fortunate that authorities discovered and dismantled this operation before it was able to launch. But I mean, this is just one. What about every other organization? I mean, online speculation in the Netherlands led to talk of a base camp for organized crime and the torturing of adversaries in order to extract information from them. Sounds way more sinister than that. But the exact motive, you know, that has never been revealed by authorities. No other information has been revealed by authorities. You know, horror films are for entertainment value. You know, but we don't usually stop and think about where the directors and the writers draw their inspiration from. So it makes you wonder, you know, what they've seen or been told. You know, it's intriguing when you realize that at the time are showing you not only what they want in their films, but things that they know that happened. And it's completely, those kind of films, especially like Hostel and stuff, or Sacrament. You know, it's a little different than, say, Final Destination, right? Which I've had the creator of it on the podcast before, Jeffrey Reddick, where it's just, hey, what's an interesting way to die? And is death an actual, you know, entity that can be altered? You know, it's not like, say, Candyman, which, you know, is based on a real character. Just I've talked about on here before. It's not like that. You can kind of tell when something comes out of the imagination, when something is just, like Get Out. When you think about that, is there, you know, going to kill you for your eyes? You know, those kind of things seem more based in reality, especially when you have something like these, you know, shipping containers that converted, you know, and had been soundproof, thousands and thousands of dollars spent on each one. What were they doing with them? Was it for trafficking victims? Was it for being sold to, say, the CIA or something so they can interrogate people and torture them or have somebody else do it? It makes you think, because that's a lot of money just to put out up front. Anyway, I just kind of wanted to share that with you because I do talk about cults a lot, and I wanted you to hear about movies. And maybe you, again, if you watch Hostel, you probably will not sleep for about a week, but good luck watching.